Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Statutory Priority Scheme Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On December 7th, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Shizuski v. Jevic Holding Corporation. Jevic Transportation, Inc., a trucking company headquartered in New Jersey, was purchased by a subsidiary of Sun Capital Partners in 2006. In 2008, Jevic filed for bankruptcy under Chapter 11 of the Bankruptcy Code, at which point it owed about $73 million to various creditors. Jevic's former truck drivers then sued it for violating federal and state worker adjustment and retraining notification acts by failing to provide the requisite 60 days notice before a layoff. Separately, unsecured creditors filed the fraudulent conveyance action. In March 2012, representatives of all the major parties met to negotiate a settlement of the fraudulent conveyance suit. The representatives, except for the driver's representative, agreed to a settlement that would provide for payment of legal and administrative fees, a schedule for the payment of various creditors, though not the drivers, and ultimately a structured dismissal of the Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The drivers and the U.S. trustee objected, arguing that the settlement would improperly distribute estate property to creditors with lower priority than the drivers. In violation of the bankruptcy code, the bankruptcy court rejected these objections and approved the proposed settlement. The U.S. District Court and then the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit affirmed, holding that the bankruptcy court had not abused its discretion in approving a structured dismissal that did not adhere strictly to the bankruptcy code's priority scheme. The question now before the U.S. Supreme Court is whether a bankruptcy court may authorize the distribution of settlement proceeds in a manner that violates the statutory priority scheme. To discuss the case, we have Thomas Plank, who is the Joel A. Katz Distinguished Professor of Law at the University of Tennessee College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Plank.
This case presents the issue of whether a bankruptcy court can approve a settlement agreement and dismissal of a Chapter 11 bankruptcy case that provides for a distribution of settlement proceeds among creditors of the debtor in a way that does not comply with the priority rules for distributions to creditors under a Chapter 11 reorganization plan or a Chapter 7 liquidation. Note that I joined the brief of the law professors and sort of in support of the petitioners, so take that into consideration. Respondents, Jevic Holding Corp. and its subsidiaries, which operated a trucking company, were acquired in June 2006 by the respondents, Sun Capital Partners, in a leveraged buyout financed or refinanced by a secured loan from the respondent's CIT Group Business Credit as agent for a lender group. 2 years later, May 2008, Jevic stopped substantially all of its operations and sent notices of termination to most of its employees and then filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy petition. Shortly thereafter, the petitioners, a group of about 1,200 drivers, filed a claim for damages under the Federal Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act and its state counterpart, what I call the WARN Acts, because of the debtor's failure to provide 60 days notice of termination. Approximately $8 million of their claims were entitled to priority over general unsecured creditors under the priority rules that the code provides for certain pre-petition claims of workers. In addition, an official committee representing the secured creditors commenced a fraudulent adversary proceeding against CIT and Sun, claiming that the leveraged buyout financed by CIT was avoidable as fraudulent under Section 548A of the Bankruptcy Code and comparable state fraudulent transfer law. A little more than 3 years later, respondents reached a settlement agreement that resolved all claims among the debtor Jevic, the official committee, CIT, the lender group, and Sun. The settlement provided, one, $3.7 million, of which $2 million would satisfy unpaid Chapter 11 administrative claims, and $1.7 million for the unsecured creditors with lower priority than the drivers. The dismissal with prejudice of the fraudulent conveyance adversary proceeding, and dismissal of the Chapter 11 case. The drivers, however, received nothing. Now, this arrangement is called a structured dismissal in that it alters the effect of an ordinary dismissal under Section 349, which simply dismisses the case and restores all parties to their pre-petition status. Even in 349, a court with cause can modify the effect of that rule, but legislative history indicates that has a special limitation. The drivers and the United States trustee objected to the settlement agreement and dismissal because the settlement agreement provided for no payment of the driver's priority WARN claims, but did provide for payment to creditors with lower priority. The bankruptcy court rejected these objections and approved the settlement and dismissal. The bankruptcy court concluded that the possibility of recovery by Jevic's bankruptcy estate or the drivers on the fraudulent conveyance claim was remote, and that because of the liens held by Sun and CIT, there were no funds to pay administrative expenses, and therefore no Chapter 11 plan could be confirmed. And further, neither the drivers nor the other unsecured creditors would receive anything in a Chapter 7 liquidation. The District Court and the Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit upheld the bankruptcy court, and the Supreme Court granted a writ of certiorari. Now, this case presents the general question of when a bankruptcy court must follow what appears to be specific directions in the bankruptcy code that may produce an ugly result, or instead may use its discretion to deviate from those directions to produce a result that is arguably more equitable. Specifically, a confirmed plan under Chapter 11 must provide for payment to creditors of different classes in accordance with a fixed priority waterfall, unless the affected creditors consent to different treatment. In particular, a plan must pay priority unsecured claims, like the driver's WARN claims, in full before lower priority creditors and general unsecured creditors may receive anything under the plan, again, unless the drivers otherwise agree. In this case, however, there were no funds even to pay administrative expenses, and therefore no plan could be confirmed. If a plan cannot be confirmed, the bankruptcy court may either convert the case to a Chapter 7 liquidation or dismiss the case, whichever is in the best interest of the creditors and the estate. Under Chapter 7, the property of the estate is distributed according to the same distribution priority waterfall required of a Chapter 11 plan. However, in this case, the only remaining unencumbered property of the estate was the fraudulent conveyance action against CIT and Sun. The bankruptcy court believed that this asset had little value, in part because there were insufficient assets to pay the costs of liquidating the action against well-funded defendants who could raise many complicated defenses to the action. Accordingly, the bankruptcy court determined that a Chapter 7 liquidation would result in the holders of the administrative expense claims, the drivers, and other unsecured creditors receiving nothing. Because of these conditions, the bankruptcy court thought that the settlement agreement and dismissal that did produce $3.7 million to pay administrative expense claims and a small percentage of the claims of junior priority creditors and general unsecured creditors, but nothing for the drivers' WARN claims, in return for a release of CIT and Sun from liability for the fraudulent transfer claim, was the least bad alternative. The settlement did produce some benefit for holders of some claims, and the court believed that the drivers would be no worse off than they would have been in a Chapter 7 liquidation. The drivers argued that the court had no authority to permit this settlement agreement and structured dismissal, distributing property of the estate contrary to the distribution priority rules for a Chapter 11 plan or Chapter 7 liquidation. The respondents argued that there was nothing in the bankruptcy code that required a settlement agreement and structured dismissal to conform to these distribution priority rules. They further argued Section 363B, which authorizes the debtor to use, sell, or lease property of the estate, authorized a court to permit a distribution that deviated from the distribution priority rules in rare cases when there was a good reason to do so. The respondents pointed to two other departures from the distribution priority rules that courts commonly approve. These are the first day orders that permit the debtor in a Chapter 11 to pay in full pre-petition wages owed to workers and to pay the pre-petition claims of so-called critical vendors. Otherwise, the workers would refuse to continue to work and the vendors would refuse to continue to supply goods and services to the debtor after the petition. Petitioners, on the other hand, pointed out significant distinctions between these exceptions to the distribution priority rules. First, these exceptions were justified because of the necessity for continued operation of the debtor in possession's business in a Chapter 11. Approving the payment of prepetition claims in full was necessary to permit the debtor to continue to operate its business and potentially reorganize. Second, the orders almost always receive the consent of the unsecured creditors, who would presumably benefit more from a successful reorganization than from a liquidation. These justifications simply did not apply to the structured dismissal in this case. Further, it's not clear that the drivers are no worse off simply because the junior creditors got paid something. CIT and Sun received a release from liability for the federal and state law fraudulent transfer claims, including claims that the drivers could have asserted outside of bankruptcy. These fraudulent transfer claims may not have been worth much, but can it be said that they're worth nothing? CIT and Sun were willing to pay $3.7 million to obtain the release of these claims. One could argue that the federal and state WARN acts are bad policy, or that WARN claims should not be treated as priority claims for workers. These are legislative choices, however, and if the choices produce an ugly result, so be it. One has to weigh the possibility of an ugly choice against the costs associated with recognizing or creating, depending on how one views the bankruptcy code, an exception to the code's priority distribution rules. The courts below and the respondents emphasize that only in rare cases would a settlement agreement as part of a structured dismissal deviate from the distribution priority rules. And this case presented such a rare case. The difficulty with this approach, however, is the lack of any standard for such an exception. Creating or acknowledging the power of a bankruptcy court to make exceptions to the distribution priority rules will create uncertainty that is likely to increase costs, not only in negotiating future Chapter 11 plans, but more broadly in future commercial and business transactions. My own sense is that the court will reverse the lower courts and require compliance with the distribution priority rules in the case of a structured dismissal. Of course, this prediction is consistent with my general view on how courts should interpret the bankruptcy code and all other statutes, and therefore you should take this prediction with a large grain of salt.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.